Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagonige, Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Beginning of Part 2. Thank you for supporting Prophecy Keepers Radio with your tax-deductible offerings to the Oklava Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace.
Can I offer you the Shumash creation about the people of the heart?
Please do.
Okay. This was told to me by Grandfather Victor Lopez and also one of our Shumash people, Kotlota. And it was told to me in 1978 when I was there at Point Conception, and then also later when I was to live with Grandfather Mr. Lopez Gallego. And I don't know if this is the whole story intact, or I can only give you what it is that was shared with me. And he started off by saying, and I believe he was talking about the Shumash people, I don't know. You can draw your own conclusions, but these were his words. He said, "We are not of this planet. We are star people. We came from the Pleiades, the seven sisters, in silent ships powered by the sun. We came to a great continent of land that went out in the Pacific Ocean. And there we brought a great technology, and it was a technology of the power of the sun through crystals. And with this technology, we were able to move great masses of earth, create great channels or irrigation, and to," he spoke of there being a way of anti-gravity, anti-gravity and the power of lasers, power of the crystal, or the sun by the crystal. And then there were the people of the mind who were not satisfied with that much power. And what they did was they took the natural crystal, changed its shape. I believe he said it was something from concave to convex or the other way around, but somehow there was some changes done fooling around with those crystals. And when they did that, and they became even more powerful and began to affect the gravity of Mother Earth, and the pole shifted, there was great upheavals and earthquakes, and land masses began to sink, and others were forced upward, and they caused a great schism with the people. And they were divided, became divided to the people of the mind and the people of the heart. And the people of the heart warned the people of the mind that they were no longer in balance. And the kind of technology that they were using was now very dangerous and could destroy the land and the life as we knew it. But the people of the mind figured that they had created this problem, and that if they became more powerful, they would be able to set it right. Well, it didn't work. And our land began, over a period of time, to disappear into the ocean, out the Pacific Ocean. And I'm told that there were those of us who were the memorizers. And over a period of time only, I think that we might have been aquatic to begin with, but became the dolphin. And they went into the ocean to survive and to remember these stories about what had happened to us. And the land disappeared. Some people say that there was a great rainbow bridge that connected the sinking continent to the west coast here. And there were those who survived by coming that way. Now, some say that the dolphins became the people who fell into the sea, but frankly, I think the dolphins are so smart that I prefer to believe the story about that they were the memorizers.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at the skeleton of a dolphin, of course, they have hip bones, they have a pelvis, they feed their babies with breast milk.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at their fins and their tail, that is actually the skeleton of two legs, and there are actually five phalange finger bones in each of the fins. And so, you know, they must have been land-oriented at one time, and the only reason to have five fingers is to manipulate, to use hands. And everyone should take a look at the skeleton of a dolphin. They're in the books. It's quite remarkable. Well, the story finishes up by saying there were those who survived by going into the sea. They were the memorizers, our ancient ones. And then others who managed to survive by coming to the western edge of this continent, and that they could live in abundance and in peace and in harmony as long as they kept the laws of living within the code of nature, then they would survive and they would be comfortable. But they were warned, and this is what Kodmoda said at this point, he said that they were warned that there might come again the people of the mind, and that they would approach them from east of our continent, and that if they got a foothold, then there would be no stopping them until they had pushed the people of the heart to the western edge of this land. And when the people of the heart, they were of many colors and cultures, found themselves with their backs against, when they could be pushed no further, an amazing thing would happen. They would begin begin to turn around, recognize each other, and remember. And from this recognition at the western edge of this continent, the remembering, the turning around, they would create a great wave of the heart that would move across from the western edge of this continent to the east, and then around the whole world, restoring harmony and balance.
Well, it certainly looks like it's coming true, because when you think about the fulfillment of the when the Hopi prophecy began to be fulfilled, when the young people, the grandchildren of and the great grandchildren of the ones who fought at Greasy Grass, the Custer fight, that fulfillment of prophecy, the hippie movement, you know, which became the New Age movement, and which has become so many things, but these people, well, Grandfather Rolling Thunder called them the reincarnates, and I see that these people are much more seem to be much more accepting of what's being taught than the Native people today. It seems like the young Native people today tend to get involved with the struggle and they go join AIM and they're just and it's really funny, they didn't live through most of them didn't live through the boarding school years, and you know, they weren't beaten by their teachers, but even though they didn't go through those experiences, they've internalized that anger, which I think is really interesting. And
well, it's much easier to criticize and condemn than it is to build, you know, and create.
Sure is.
But the elders aren't like that.
No, they aren't. They really are.
It was a terrible thing that happened to them when the children were forcibly removed from their families and their culture and raised in these penal institutions, not allowed to speak their language, put in ill-fitting clothes, and treated like they were dirty and something was wrong with them.
I know
the generation that reclaimed those. There are those among the white societies that started going back to Celtic traditions and the Druid schools and Margitic and Buddhist, and talking about the goddess times, the Aquarian culture, and living with the earth, and people going back into rediscovering the Egyptians, the Mayans, the Incans, the Zoroastrians, the Kabbalah, Hindu, Sufi. It was just so exciting. I was just the right age. I was in my teens in the 50s, and in the 60s I was in my 20s and emancipated, and I was in the middle of it, and it was extraordinary that anything that lasted really such a short time was so huge. It was like the very air crackled with an electricity of love and celebration. Tremendous.
Isn't that something?
Did you want me to talk about the Hopi pen?
Please, please, yeah, absolutely.
And then you've got it on your website as well?
I've got the Hopi Ted and the Uncle John both. They're very important.
Well, I would really like to give it right now myself, because people have already, with the stories of the blanket of hope, the Hopi Ted, people must realize that the oral tradition is sacred, absolutely inviolate. The words that the elders use are extraordinary.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Bluehour speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony. So it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
To all mankind again, Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper, oh
when I committed them to memory and then wrote them down, stuck it on my refrigerator, on my medicine cabinet wall, just looked at them over and over again, that there are dimensions and levels to each thing they say, and so it must not be changed. And I look on the internet these days, there are a few places where people have taken my words. We also had them Xeroxed and passed a lot of them out. And they have reproduced them on the internet as they were given. And yet I'm very disappointed. In many places I find that the wording has been changed, and in doing so, it's simply not as clear. It's confusing. People take the elders' words, like whatever it was that was in the Bible, and tend to use them for their own agendas. And it's terribly important within an oral tradition, and I will speak especially for the Native American, when you get something that comes out of the elders and the traditionalists, you must, and it's not difficult to commit it to memory, to not take a license with it, because you're cheating yourself of the learning curve that it creates. So anyway, that's my little, what do you call that thing you stick in the front? Disclaimer.
Oh yeah, your preamble. But this is absolutely true, because people of the book don't know how it works with traditional people. They don't understand that the traditional people have memorized everything. These things have been passed down for thousands of years, and every word is weighed and calculated to have its effect.
Yes, right. Well, what I'll do is I'll quickly tell you how the Hopi Dance came about. In 1993, I was living in Northern California, and it was a terrible, terrible time among Indian communities. There was a group that called themselves, Center for Spirit. That's right.
Right.
Like the moral majority was neither. I don't know who these people, I could name a name, but I don't know, maybe I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
They were attacking all Native peoples who were sharing knowledge of the Native American way, the earth knowledge. Well, as Thomas Bunyantia said, this is critical, that this knowledge needs to be shared, it must be shared. It is because it's been hasn't been shared that we're in such a mess. And he said, on this Turtle Island, at this time, by the time of the day of the time of purification comes, there will be people from all the directions who will found themselves here. People from the east, people from the south, people from the north, Europeans, Asians, Africans, all the peoples will find themselves here on Turtle Island, and they will bring their knowledge, their portion of the truth that was given by Masao, and people will gravitate toward it. They'll want to hear it and learn it, practice it. The last piece that will be offered, and it will be the most difficult there will be a great struggle around it, and that will be the knowledge of the people of the West. That is the American continent. People are so used to calling a Western culture, Western thought, and that naming European that way. Well, they're the people of the North. There was a whole continent to the west of them that they didn't seem to include or acknowledge. So here, this earth knowledge is a home and for all of our relations, living in right relation with the earth in the sacred manner. The kind of things that come out of the Native American culture is the last, and that's the Native culture of Turtle Island, and it is the last that will be listened to. But if all the truth of the four directions are come here, and the sacred hoop is minted on Turtle Island, then we will have the peace and the prosperity and all that is prophesied about the fifth world. Well, there was this group, and they took on the mantle of Native Americans, and what they did was attack anyone who was sharing Native American wisdom, Earth people's knowledge. And to the point where there were threats on people's life, there were just terrible things. There were letters sent out to discredit people, libel and slander all over the place.
Still going on.
And attacks, that's right, it is still going on. I'm very suspicious of that group, because any true Native American group that's working in the light and the truth never has hardly any money to work from. They're always struggling. But I understand that there was several Native clone groups that seemed to have plenty of shiny jackets and walkie-talkies and cell phones and all kinds of equipment and stuff in this Center for Spirit that also called itself the Bay Area Indian Community, and there was none. There's no such thing, not as far as an organized group is concerned. It never had an address, it never had a phone number, it had a post office box. And they sent out all kinds of letters and denouncing these Indian elders and casting doubts on them. And so many people, non-Indian organizations, stopped sponsoring these elders and these various teachers. They were afraid because they didn't want to be politically incorrect or making a mistake, or they were afraid of being bombed, and there were those threats that were made. So all of the venues that made it possible for us to talk to the people of other colors and other cultures were closed down to us by people purporting to be of our own blood. And that was very, very serious, and there was just paranoia and fear, and it was very ugly. It made all Indian people look bad and confused everyone else. So one day I got on the phone and I called Thomas Manyanka, and he's almost never home. This day he answered himself, and I told him, I said, please help me remember. There are many people who are saying I shouldn't be telling these stories or teaching these spirit tools. And so I want to ask you, do you remember when I was with you, and it was over 30 years ago, he said, yes, I remember very well. And I said, the story of the Hopi prophecy and the different things that you told me, or did you tell me those things just for myself alone? Were they a secret? Or I was under the impression that everyone could gain great value by learning these things, and that you wanted people to be told, and that's why you told me. And he said, yes, that's right. Well, I just heaved a great sigh, because I had begun to think that I was getting this flack because I was doing something that I wasn't supposed to, and I'd gotten it mixed up in 30-some years. And so he said, yes, you are right. He said, we did give this to you to share with others who we hoped would then share it with others. And he said, the elders will want to speak to you. And he said, can you come now? And I was going to school. I'd gone back to school at the time. And then I realized this was right at the beginning of the Easter break. And I said, yes, I can leave tomorrow. And he said, good, the elders will want to meet with you. So the next day I drove exactly 1,000 miles from Highway 101 to Third Mesa and Newark Riding, where Thomas lives. And so then I went to his house, and I stayed there for several days, and the elders didn't come, and he didn't come, and it was getting to be about time where I was going to have to go back home. And then the daughter, the oldest daughter of Chief Mina Monksa, John Monksa, came to me, and she said, the elders will not come to you while you're here. I was confused by that. I didn't understand what she meant. She said, so pack your clothes, take up your things, and I will take you to her writing.
Ah.
So I went with her to her mother's house. Of course, Mina and John have now passed on, and the house was passed on to her and her son. And I did what I had done 30 years before, which was I pulled up in front of the house, and I slept that night in my station wagon. And at dawn the next morning, I woke up with a start. And just as the light was coming on to Arrive in the dance grounds, there was a great ladder coming out of the Kiva. And they ask you to please not take pictures there. And so I never have. But I was so disappointed that 30 years later, and I had come back to Hopi, and that the elders never came, and there was no wisdom that came of my name there. And so I thought, well, I have no reason to ever return again. I just want to take a couple of pictures of this sunrise and the tops of the building and the ladder. So I took out my little camera, and I'm standing there, kind of shielding it behind the open door of the car. And just as I'm about to take a picture, I hear the shuffling, and I look, and they're coming down the road between the houses is a group of elders, and one man was a little bit younger, but these were old, old men. And they didn't seem to notice me, and they kind of shuffled past me, and they gathered in a semicircle on the dance grounds on the roof of the Kiva. And then there was the oldest man facing them with a younger man kind of supporting him at his elbow. And he began talking, and I just didn't move. I dropped the camera and just stayed right where I was. And he said, you have been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go and tell them it is the hour, and there are things to be considered. And then I realized, telling the people this is the 11th hour, well, that's me. I had called the workshops I'd done for many years, 20 years, 11th hour tools for spiritual warriors in a hurry, and now he was saying I couldn't call it that anymore. And I realized, though he was not looking at me, he was looking at the other elders in the semicircle, but I could hear him clearly, and he didn't look at me during this time. And that's when he said, this is the hour, and there are things to be considered. Now, I'm going to do the 10 as I heard them, and then I would like to go over them. Maybe we could discuss each one in its multiple meanings. But the very basic words were this: where do you live? What are you doing? Are you in right relation? What are your relationships? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth. Create your communities. Be good to each other. Do not look outside yourself for the leader. And then he brought his hands together in a great like clap, and he said, and this could be a good time.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Then as they were leaving, then they started, you know, I kind of waited holding my breath and thinking that then he was going to turn to me, because at that point I felt sure he had meant them for me, those words. But they just started to shuffle now on the other side of the road, going on the other side of the Longsa's house. And I realized that this was my moment. These were the elders, and I needed to ask them a question about all this slack I was getting along with all the other teachers. And so I kind of walked very fast, and they didn't even stop, and I was walking alongside of the elder who was doing the speaking, and I said, and they didn't look familiar. I mostly just knew Dan Kachanga, Thomas and Fermina Banyanya, Davis Norman Ondie, and yeah, and that's pretty much who I knew. So these elders, and I think they're all, those people are all past now, and these elders were every bit as old as the others seem to be, but I said, oh, please excuse me, and he kept on walking slowly. I said, I sort of started to just blither out, talking as fast as I could because they weren't pausing, and I said something about, you know, there's some, an organization and some folks out there that are trying to stop Native people from sharing the knowledge in this world that's having so much trouble. And I said, do you remember, and I said my name, before I received my Indian name, I had another name, and I said my name, and I said, do you remember when I was here before, or something like that. Anyway, he surprised me by saying, do you remember when you were here before? And I was stunned that he would remember, because I don't remember meeting him, but he said, do you remember when you were here before?
Look inside the rainbow, look inside the heart, deep in the mountain stillness, echoes of another time, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned, we'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Let the wind blow, let the truth be known to Prophecy Keeper.
Prophecy Keeper.
Oh, yeah.
Prophecies say that at this time there'd be so many people that they really wouldn't know what to do, And they said a lot of people would finally figure it out, but it would be too late to do anything about it. And so that's why I've been doing what I've doing for these years. And I was given, and I can look back now and I can see, well, I can see how I was raised. I was raised to be by articulate white people, and then turned back over to Native people, which is part of my heritage. But my dad was a professional engineer, and he prided himself. He said, "I can communicate with anybody." He said, "Whether it's the guy in the shop, you know, with the wrench, or the president of the company." And he told me, he says, "That's what you need to do. You need to be able to communicate with anybody. Don't be above anybody, but don't be below anybody." I can see I was prepared to do what I'm doing, but I just had such a sense of urgency because time is so short. So that's why you've been doing it for, 40 years, and, you know, I've been doing it basically for, about 15 years, and when you close your eyes, I'll be doing it for a while, and hopefully someone will come up behind me, but time really is short.
We've got to do it now, that's it. Okay, here's one that you probably know. Are you in right relation?
Well,
what I understand that to be is being in right relation, living your life in right relation, is your relationship to everything, to nature, to your children, to... are you a consumer? Are you one of the people that buy a product which is essentially unsafe for the planet, and so giving it a market, encouraging then these different materials that are toxic to the, increased? Do you ever get out a bicycle or walk? Are you part of the problem or part of the solution? Are you in right relation? Are you living in balance? And then the one that follows that is the one that I'm still a little unsure of, whether they said who or what are your relationships. What are your relationships? And each one of these is like a cone, to be meditated on. And then it says, where is your water? Well, I took that, especially because this was prior to Y2K, where everything is run by computer chips, and things were, we were warned that it might all stop. And so if you go to turn on the faucet and no water comes out of your faucet, or your bathtub, what are you going to do?
Uh-huh.
Do you know where your water is? Because that's going to be the first thing to be controlled, and also the first thing to be sabotaged and to go.
Absolutely.
So where is your water? When I was living in Topanga Canyon, there was a group that took the possibility of Y2K quite seriously. We thought, well, we don't know if it's going to happen or not, but what can we do to prepare? And what I did was try to find all of the old springs and the water sources before they had public water that came in. People had wells and there were springs. Well, they're still all over the place. And then, I love this one, know your garden.
You know, it takes years to know a garden.
Yeah, well, I think they're talking about more than just what you've got in the fence line in your backyard, and more than just the domestic garden in your house. I think that it's this planet is a garden. It's the garden. One of the things that I do is I take people out and I teach them how to identify medicinal and edible plants, the wild native plants, and how to take them in a sacred manner so that you're cultivating the wild, so you're encouraging growth rather than wiping out an area. And it's a beautiful experience. It's very conscious, and it's very easy to learn these things, and the wild things are still growing all around us. Well, anyway, they said, know your garden. And some of the most important medicinal and edible so-called weeds are growing in vacant lots and between the cracks and sidewalks and any place that hasn't been concreted over. Those wonderful green people just keep pushing themselves up for our benefit. So know your garden. So we've got, where do you live? What are you doing? Are you in right relations? What are your relationships? Where is your water? Know your garden. And then moved into, it is time to speak your truth. The Hopis told me that at the moment of birth, when the new being takes its first breath, when the baby takes its first breath, that's the beginning of its lifetime. And it ends with the last breath. So between those two breaths is your lifetime. Well, when that baby takes its first breath, the Hopis believe that at that moment of birth, the great mystery places in each and every one of us a sacred truth and a special strength. And that it's then up to us to define that truth, refine it, and give it back to the people. We used to have elders who, through their witnessing and observation, would help us. Now it's mostly up to us. But then here's the part that helps that part. It is time to create your community. It's critical. The elders say that the time of, oh, Uncle John said this as well, the time of the lone wolf is over. We must gather ourselves.
Absolutely. And you know, that's really hard. My family's involved with a group here in Missouri. And it's hard to come together as a small community because people are used to living all over the place and you know, making, you know, you meet together once a week, but it's mind-boggling to think, you know, what would happen if the electricity went off tomorrow, you know. And the thing that I've said to these folks is, well, you know, hey, everybody's on well systems, and you know, our wells are at least 100 feet deep. And I said the first problem we're going to have is pumping water. And
you can't rely on the electricity.
No.
From the grid.
And so you know, we've some of us are more affluent than others, and you know, when you have a group of five or six families, and then you begin to think, well, you know, some of us have a wind charger, or generators or whatever would be needed to create alternating current, and at least we could pump water, you know, for several minutes a day, you know, if it's enough to just, you know, keep you alive. But it takes coming together as a community, especially food production, those kind of things, it's really mind-boggling. So I always tell people, well, you know, you talked about know your garden, and I tell people, well, when they ask me, well, what are we going to do about food? I said, when I lived in Utah some years ago, I picked up a book that was called How to Survive a Famine. And the book had the outline of that Biafra child on the front of it. It was a black book and with a pink outline of this, pink silhouette of this child. And basically the book was full of, it was by region, and it explained what weeds in what regions are edible, so you didn't get a hold of something that would kill you. And they said that that any weed is edible and tastes really good, provided you have maybe some vegetable oil to cook it in. And it'll keep you alive. And said that you know, even grass, you know, and they said people will starve to death in the future, and there'll be tons of food around for them to eat. They just won't know how.
We got this far because our ancestors knew the foods and knew the medicines that just grew wild. And, you know, especially here in the United States, it's just a big breadbasket. Well, you know, it's more than just for a physical survival. Well, I guess it's all connected. If you are alone, there are so many lies that we are being given at this time, that if you don't have people to talk your thoughts over with, you'll feel like you're going crazy, because it seems like the whole rest of the world is all doing this one thing, and there's something inside of your being that's screaming, no, no, no. And so it's very important, number 7, when it says it's time to speak your truth. We really have to not hide ourselves, who we are, in order to get along, because then nobody will know who we really are. So at this time, it is critical to speak our truth. And then others like us can find us. We can be identified.
That's right.
And then we'll feel stronger. If there's someone else that you can speak the unspeakable to, the thing that you were afraid to share, and they go, oh, I'm so glad you said that, I feel the same way, then your whole being just takes this great breath, and you go, oh, all right, I'm all right. You know, and it gives you strength that the lone wolves, we are of an ilk, and we can all be lone wolves together. You know, we don't have to change our nature, but we do need to be around others like our soul, the colors of our soul, not our skin. And so it's time to speak your truth, and then it said from that, create your community. Maybe just people that you can celebrate with, that you can tell, and a community can be very small. And then number 9 is be good to each other. Now I have to share with you what happened to this Hopi elder's body when he said this one. Now he'd been very serious, his two hands out, but then when he said be good to each other, he kind of raised up on his heels, or on his toes a bit, and just kind of sparkled. He said be good to each other. And what I got from his energy and the way he said it and the way his body just kind of became so concentrated and it was so cute, frankly, I saw him sparkle. And it was like, be good to each other, create a community, and make it be the game, the art of being good to each other. You know, with intention, doing things that bring a smile to each other's eyes.
If we can know your wisdom, teach us what you can. Cause there's a mighty dark cloud hanging overhead.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info
and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Let the truth be known for all mankind again. Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known.
Be creative with this, and in this group, and even sometimes with strangers, what can you do that is a gift of the moment, that is a connection in this very isolated culture we experience? Be good to each other.
You know, the one thing that I've found that our little group here, basically we're six families, and there's some other families that are allied with us. But as we've gone through the process, I've noticed that the biggest struggle that each family had was that families tend to be like lone wolves themselves. And it's easy for a family to say, well, I'm going to share this with my kids. Or I'm making plans for my kids to come, but on the other hand, you know, I look at them and tell them, you know, hey, your children are probably the last people that are going to come. Yes, we can hope and pray that they'll come, but the ones that are here now that are getting ready are the ones that need each other the worst, and this is. This has been the energy block, and the dynamic that needs to be broken through. People need to recognize that you can be a lone wolf unto yourself, but you can also be lone wolves in your own family, because each family is a unit. So as you go through your dynamics in this next a year, and find your people and treat them like your family, or better than your family. You know, identify who it is that are going to be your allies, and treat them like family, because your own family may not come.
Yes, that's true, isn't it? You know, but we need to find people that we can share our fears and our joys with, that you can talk about things, you know, to discuss what we're being fed in the newspapers, through the media, what's going on, and to share our dark place with, and people that know how to treat each other with honor and respect. Have you ever read or made available to them the Hopi Ten?
Oh yes, the Hopi 10 had been in my encyclopedia with attribution to you for quite some time now. They've been up on the websites all about a year and a half, something like that.
Is this group of six families?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
oh absolutely, yeah.
Well, that kind of depersonalizes it. That's another thing that Uncle John said, God bless him. I hope he tries to get in touch with me. I have no idea where he is. I think I'm making him famous.
How old was he when you knew him in the 70s?
Oh, I actually met him in the 80s. That would have been around 83, 84.
20 years ago. How old was he then?
Well, of course, now that I'm in my 60s and I feel like a kid, he seems so old to me. I can't really tell people's ages anymore. But
you think he might have been in his 70s?
60s, 70s, yeah.
Yeah, if it was John Fadden, I think he's walked west.
Nice looking man.
Yeah, John, I believe it was. I don't know. It's just hard to know who that was.
The only thing I know about him is that at the time he was living in the Kern River, eastern part of mid-California. But anyway, here's another goodie that he said. I'm sure that I was struggling with something and shared it with him, and he said to me, it is imperative that you tell your people, Chukosh, that you tell the people that at this time in the world's history, they are not to take anything personally, least of all of themselves, because the moment that you do, your spiritual growth and journey comes to a screeching halt.
Not to take yourself seriously?
Personally.
Oh, personally.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And we're all here right now to do a job. Don't personalize it. Don't get into a big thing of it. Just take care of business.
Oh, that was the philosophy of my teacher, John Red Hat. John was adopted into Chief Mike's, Chief of Arribi's family. Chief Mike was John Lance's brother. And John's attitude was, hey, you know, it's just a job. You know, being an elder is just a job. It's nothing special. You know, everybody's got their functions. He says, it's just something you got to do. And he says, don't let it go to your head. And he says, run. He says, if you get around somebody that thinks they're somebody, he says, run from them. You know, that's always, I've always thought that way, you know.
I remember Raymond Stone, the Paiute elder, that wonderful man. And people, you know, started to put him up on a big pedestal and idolize him. And he was written about in several books. And they were starting to make a big to-do about him. And he would love to just turn around, look them straight in the eye and say, I'm just an old fart doing his job.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I've heard others say, you know, just watch the movie and take care of your business. By the way, that suddenly reminds me of something that my Shumash elder, Grandfather Victor Lopez, said. He said, you know, when it comes, and I want to say this to the people, I know in the 60s, 70s, 80s, a lot of folks who didn't look very much like an American Indian were wearing headbands and beads and feathers and all that stuff, or, you know, non-Indian people in the sweat lodges. Of course, if your family's been in the United States very long, you probably got some Indian blood in there anyway, but it's just a matter of spirit. You know, where do you live? Not blood or color. And you know, I would ask him when I would see all the discord and people, you know, wanting to know, well, what's your percentage of your Indian, or what are you doing in here? You've got blue eyes. Or I would just hear people being treated very badly. like that. And so I asked him about that, and he said to me, he said, when it comes to your spirit way, he said, what you must do is do whatever you do with honor and respect. And if you do that, then it's between your and you and your creator, and it isn't anybody else's business.
Honor. Honor is, people want to basically understand respect, but honor is another thing. I know when my first wife, after she passed away and I remarried, within 6 months she came back, and I see her quite often. Whenever something's going to happen that might shake me up, she will always let me know something's going to happen. Anyway, she showed up and told Betty something, and she says, if you don't raise Joseph, that was her son and my son, and she says, if you don't raise Joseph with honor, he'll be taken away from you and given to somebody else. And don't you think that didn't shake us up? Well, honor, it's, you can't look that up in the encyclopedia. There's a little bit of a picture of what it is in the dictionary, but you have to go to organizations like the Wyoming Guides or the Boy Scouts and those kind of people. They're the only ones that really deal in those kind of terms, and the biggest problem I see, there's a lot of people running around that have big holes in their hearts, and they grab a hold of native culture, but even for whatever reason, they've got some native blood or they become enamored with it. And before they internalize it, they just say, oh, well, I'm an Indian. And then they don't change their ways. They still think like the old person. So it's the same kind of process, I guess, that any spiritual organization asks you to go through, and that is, people need to learn what honor really is, and not deny those things which are honest and truthful, and embrace them. It's just, we live in a culture that just doesn't teach those values very readily, which is really a shame.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And sometimes that really used to turn me off, but then after my elder, and it was that kind of angst that I had, like many other Native people around that, the kind of annoying, not presumption, but posturing. And so that's when I asked Victor Lopez, loving people and wisest that I've ever, his wisdom came from love. And there wasn't a whole lot of that going around in the Indian community at the time. Everybody was trying to figure out how to be Indian, because there'd been such a breaking of the lineage. And we did talk further about it, and I said the same thing that you said about these people who come in posturing and without changing their lot, their ways. But he said, well, think of this. They could have been drawn something in their soul through them to what is the wisdom of the earth people's knowledge here. And he said, so maybe they're just jumping around, making a lot of noise and wearing feathers and beads. But who knows? Everyone enters this at their own pace, in their own level. And maybe by doing this, so he comes, or she comes to a Sundance or a Sweat Lodge or a powwow, and they wear all these things, but then they're brought into this and they're exposed to it. And maybe through time, though they entered in a superficial way, it speaks to them and they begin to grow up.
That's right.
Deeper. Well, and he said, besides, Creator will take care of them.
That's right. And people need, one of my wife's, my wife has a direct female lineage back to her clan. She's one of the few Cherokees that knows what clan she comes from. But one of her her famous sayings is, "Hey, you have two holes to listen with, and one to make noise with." So, Creator obviously wants us to listen twice as much as to talk. That's good advice.
Yes, it is. And remember something that Twilight Inch, Seneca Elder said to me. You know, when you pointing your finger at somebody else, look at you, do that with your hand. And so I did that.
You got three pointing back at you.
Exactly. Those are great. You know, that's really wonderful. And there you are. It's the truth.
Well, let's see. Have you covered the 10 yet, or were you on 9?
No, we did. Oh, that's right. Okay, be good to each other. Oh, we did 9. Be good to each other, he said. And 10. And do not look outside yourself for the leader.
Absolutely. You know, and you know what? This is what I've talked about. This is what Red Elk talks about. You know, and this is what people really laugh at us for talking about, you know, is that it's a completely foreign concept to a lot of people that we should not even look beyond ourselves for, one of my favorite stories is and I talk a lot about the Bible and everything because I was brought up in that tradition and I use those teachings from the Bible to try to point out some of the realities rather than what people believe is the dogma. And I said, you know, when Moses went up the mountain, I said, all the people were invited to go up. And they said, no, Moses, you go on up. And the first time he came down, you know, he came down with a set of laws and, you know, he saw that, you know, the people were not going to be able to live those laws. And he broke those laws, and then he went back up and got another law. And those laws that those people have been living for these, you know, many thousands of years are a very difficult law. And but if they had gone up the mountain with him the first time, we never would have had the priests between us. We never would have needed anyone between us and our Creator. Right, Jesus said, my sheep know my voice. And, you know, he also said, if you come to me, and if I never knew you, I'm going to say I never knew you. So now's the time to establish a direct relationship with whatever your concept of your God is. Because if you talk, rather than talking at it, if you talk with it, they will, your Creator will begin to establish a contact with you and will help protect you. And I, you know, when people ask me, well, should we move out of the cities and how close is it getting? And I say, hey, don't worry about it. The thing you need to worry about is, are you going to be fearful when this happens? Because I said, if you have the voice of the Creator and access to it, you're never going to worry about anything. Because you're going to know for a certainty that before it happens, you're going to know what's going to happen. And, you know, so I look at my Christian friends and say, hey, you remember when the two people were going around the camp of Israel and the people went to Moses complaining? And Moses kind of said, well, so what? You know, he says, I would that everyone could be a prophet. So this is the natural order of things is to be your own prophet, to be your own priest, and to be your own king. And I think that's what we're finally coming around to as we get ready to go with Mother Earth into these changes. And it can be easy or it can be hard, depending on how we react to it.
I think that where religion went wrong is they got fixated on the messenger. And because what instead of the source and the truth and the message that the messenger was carrying, they made a cult around the messenger instead of keeping their eyes on the sun or their focus on the source, the creator, in whatever language you want to say, you know, that is all around and is in everything. And so by fixating on the messengers instead of fixating on the message, that created all these divisions and my messenger better than your messenger. And it's just terribly sad because nobody's paying attention to what they said. And they did. They created a cult around the messenger. But about this death business, in 1988, from 1985 to 88, there were a couple of attempts on my life because I was considered one of the leaders of the protest against the canonization of Umbra Sera. And apparently one of the attempts, or two of them, I believe, I wasn't even aware of until afterwards. But this one, on January the 17th at 6 o'clock in the morning, 1988, I guess, my friend Anna Mary Brown was driving me through the rain from Pacific Grove, California, to San Francisco at the Unitarian Church in Franklin and Erie. And it was a colloquium of mainstream ministers, like Episcopalian, Lutheran, Methodist, Protestant, those groups, Unitarian, I'm not sure if Unity was involved, but those ministers coming from all over the United States to talk about spirituality and the environmental ethic. And I was asked to do the opening talk. Well, we never made it because about 20 minutes from home, driving on pretty much a deserted 101 highway, the rain wasn't that bad, and all of a sudden we were struck by a vehicle from behind us, struck so hard it turned our car into what seemed like an accordion fleet. And my friend who was driving was killed instantly. And when we were found by the Aromas Fire Department rescue crew, they had checked both of our vital signs and neither one of us were showing anything. So as far as they were concerned, I was also dead. But let me tell you what my experience was. One minute, I was looking at her hands, and then I guess we were struck. I don't remember the crash at all. I had been told just a week before by someone, and they said to me, you know, when you die, like if it's an accident or something horrific, like an explosion or so forth, your soul leaves your body just before it happens. And I went, oh, okay, and kind of forgot about it. Well, this is what I experienced. One minute, I turned around and looked at her hands, and then without skipping a beat, the next thing I knew, we were having a conversation out of the car, walking down the highway 101, walking south. And I looked, and I was caught, you know, it's dark in January at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's pitch dark. But I noticed that the shrubs that were on either side of the highway seemed to have kind of like an amber glow around them. And that I was trying to keep up with her. She seemed to be very determined. She knew exactly where she was going. And I was just trying to keep up with her because I remember remarking to myself, this is the most interesting conversation I have ever had with anybody in my whole life. So I kept, you know, keeping up with your going sound through the darkness. And then a light came off to my right, and with it a buzzing sound, and then I pushed it away out of my consciousness and then had to catch up with her again. This happened 3 times, and each time the buzzing sound and the light became stronger. And on the 3rd time, I saw that I was like in 2 different worlds. There was my friend as I watched her walking away in the distance going south, and then there was me trying to deal with this buzzing sound and this light. And pretty soon, the buzzing sound and the light became more real, and she kind of faded off into the distance. And the buzzing sound, eventually I was able to make out that they were words, and the light was a flashlight. There's no light at the end of the tunnel here. And they were brushing, you know, calling my name. It turned out that the rescue worker, Pete McCusick, the one that was there in the car with me and trying to, you know, brush the glass off me and so forth, had been himself in a sweat lodge the night before, and the people there had been asked to pray on me, for me, on my behalf. So he knew who I was. And then as I came out of it, I realized that my friend had slumped over and was lying across my lap, and her head was facing towards the dashboard, and I had my right hand under her right cheek, and my left hand was on top of her head, kind of just cradling her head between my hands. And they told me later on that they had not, in quite a while, that they had not been able to find any vital signs on me, and that my friend had been killed instantly. Her heart had ruptured. It had literally exploded by the impact behind it. What I experienced, and is as real today as this moment that I'm speaking to you, is that body, I felt exactly precisely the same, and the difference wasn't so much as a winking of an eye. And there is, we are this spiritual being having this human experience, and when we drop the overcoat, when we step out of the body, it isn't even a hiccup, and we just continue on. The mystery, the miracle of conscious life is so much bigger than what the body can hold. And this I know for sure.
Well, that's a good place to let folks think about what they've heard tonight. We sure appreciate you being on Prophecy Keepers as our guest tonight. And
well, it is such a great pleasure. It makes my blood pump. It's where I live in sharing these things. No, it's just, it's where I live.
Let the truth be known.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Let the truth